I just hope it's, you know, 5 degrees when I'm in Miami in a few weeks.
It's March, and Lord knows it should not be this sweltering hot in the WMFO Medford studios.
It's really warm.
In March. March, yeah. Kids. March. When we come back, did you hear all the other stories that caught our attention this week here on WMFO Medford?
I'm Sarah Beck, consumer meat specialist for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, with some tips on buying meat for economy and value. You can be sure you're getting both if you use the USDA quality grades Prime, Choice, and Good as your guide. When you see USDA Prime stamped on a piece of meat, you'll know you're getting the top quality. Of course, it'll probably be the most expensive. Choice is the grade you'll see in most stores, and it's almost as high in quality. Although good grade is not as juicy and flavorful as the higher grades, it's somewhat more lean and acceptably tender. It's often a good buy for the thrifty shopper. For more free information on meat quality, write How to Buy Meat, Agriculture Radio, Washington, D.C., 20250. That's How to Buy Meat, Agriculture Radio, Washington, D.C., 20250.
I'm going to the hardware store.
Oh, will you pick up 800 lumen bulbs?
800 more flowers? The neighbors will think we're wacky.
Not flower bulbs, light bulbs.
Come on, Dad. Lumens tell you how bright the bulb is. We can replace our 60-watt bulbs with energy-saving bulbs that give off about 800 lumens.
So, we'll save money.
Right.
Got it. 800 lumens and more savings.
Lumens, the new way to shop for light. Learn more at energysavers.gov.
Welcome back to The Big Picture on WMFO 91.5 Medford. I am Lisa Nichols, here with Derek Gary, with you every Wednesday night, 7 to 9. As always, we want you to be a part of the show, and you can do that by giving us a call at 855-915-WMFO. Again, that's 855-915-9636.
Let us remind the listeners that I won the Oscar pool this year. two more correct than Lisa.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So, and that my team, won, Kim and I won.
We are back
versus
to
you and Molly
format. So it's time for Did You Hear?
Yeah.
Another segment where Derek and I can compete with each other. And we do that by giving each other one or two words from something in this week's news and have to explain it.
Mm-hmm.
As always, I will start. Takata.
Takata, that is the airbag folks, have just been hit with a record fine by the United States government for basically building exploding airbags and knowing that they were building exploding airbags. $14 billion?
Don't have the exact number. But
higher? I know it's a record fine. I think it's somewhere around like $14 billion.
What is also very, very bad in this situation, you have allegations against Ford, Honda, Toyota, and Nissan all being a part of this, willingly knowing that this is what happens to the airbags and putting them. That is going to be very, very difficult to prove.
Yeah, that's
but these are the allegations.
That's the problem in all of this. And it's, I believe the government is saying that they have internal documents that show that these people knew about it. Again,
or at least knew to some point that there could be faulty airbags and what could happen to these airbags for them to implode or whatnot.
Yeah. So you're going to have a really tough time making a case against any of the U.S. automakers.
But Takata.
Takata, yeah. I mean, you're screwed, you know, and it's the Japanese, for all of the good,
just to save money on costs,
for all of the good things that they do, tend to take consumer safety a little bit more lightly than we do in this country. And we've seen this numerous times with the Japanese. So this is just the latest example. It's not a ding on them. It just,
like all those phone batteries that are blowing up.
No, that was the Koreans. It just tends to be the way they think. You know, they hear about Americans are upset because somebody got killed by a car, and they're like, "What? Well, yes, of course, people get killed by cars all the time," and they move on. Whereas Americans are like, "You can't build a product that kills people," and the Japanese just don't seem to get that one little thing.
Yeah,
kind of hurts them in the industry. Tanning beds.
Ooh.
You, of all people, I thought would have seen this story.
I am so incredibly pale right now. Tanning beds. Are they trying to pass new laws again?
Not yet, but they probably will be. This came out on Monday, by the way. This was...
I have to admit, Monday was, yeah... Didn't look at too much news.
Research from the government finds that America is spending $343 million annually in skin cancer treatments due to tanning beds. 30 million people use them annually, mostly teens.
Mm-hmm.
They should just call it the skin cancer store.
I absolutely...
Come on down to the skin cancer store.
I have to admit, you know, during my high school years, you would sign up at two different tanning salons because you were only limited in one visit, and either your 12-minute max or your 15-minute max, and you would go from one place to another.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sad. This
really is a product that we don't need.
Mm-hmm.
There is no reason for tanning beds. There's no reason for this to exist other than the fact that Americans are incredibly vain and incredibly ignorant about the health risks. Like cigarettes, they should be banned.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, my boyfriend works in pathology, and he sees these things all the time, and it's horrific to know like what comes off of the body, and a lot of it is due to melanoma.
Yep.
All right.
They should call it the skin cancer store.
I'm going to give you Antarctica.
Antarctica set a world record for a high temperature of 62.5 degrees.
So close. 63.5.
I knew it was, I knew it was somewhere in there.
Now, this is Argentina research base near the northern tip of Antarctica Peninsula. And again, 63.5 degrees Fahrenheit. That's crazy. This came out today. And the base, the previous high was on March 24th.
It is summer down there, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
So let's keep that in
mind. But you think Antarctica, freezing cold.
Yeah. But it is
beautiful.
Yeah. Come on down to Antarctica. Like, see some penguins. You know, take a selfie with a polar bear. Try not to get eaten. We have seals. colon cancer.
Ooh, colon cancer.
I'm just bringing out all the cancer tonight.
Colon and rectal cancer are up in the United States, and the most that it's been in, I believe it's like the past four decades. They announced that was either yesterday or Monday, and that has to do with obesity.
Nope.
What?
You're way off.
That's true, though.
That's
a story.
That's a factor. There is a much more specific angle to this story that I need.
That was the huge headline.
No, that was not. That was not the headline.
All right, then tell me, what was the huge headline?
The headline was that millennials and Generation Xers,
yes,
are getting colon cancer at record rates,
mm-hmm.
and they shouldn't be because it's a disease that doesn't affect people until they're in their 60s.
Well, think about how many doctors would recommend for you to get a colonoscopy at what? They say 40, 50?
They're thinking now they need to move it up.
Now, talking about millennials and Generation Xers, yeah.
And here's the reasons
why. It's the
why-
same thing about breast cancer. Before, you used to only get it at, you know, 40 years old, then it moved down to 35, 30. Now I'm getting them.
Here's the reasons why you're getting the colon cancer, kids. You sit around all day because we're all working desk jobs now.
Fat.
Not fat.
Obesity has a very, very...
Yeah, but that's secondary to what you... Fat is not one of the contributors.
Obesity, inactivity, poor diets. Should I go on?
There are two specific things in the diet that contribute to colon cancer. Sugar and red meat. Not necessarily fat. Sugar and red meat. Those are a problem. Smoking is a problem. Drinking is a problem. I need to go get my ass checked. Is really...
Have you had a colonoscopy?
No, I'm not. I'm not that age.
But
I'm nowhere near that.
You might need to be.
No, it's no. I got everything working fine down there.
Subway.
Is this the transportation device or the restaurant formerly represented by a child molester?
The latter.
So this would be the Subway sandwich chain. Yes. It turns out there ain't much chicken in their chicken. In fact, their chicken, according to Canadian researchers, only has, I've got this number in front of me, 50% meat.
Yeah,
As opposed to Wendy's and McDonald's, which came up both north of 84% meat.
Mm-hmm. So obviously 100% across the board in your grocery stores. They did look at different restaurants. Wendy's grilled chicken sandwich scored 88.5. Tim Hortons, which we don't have any around here. Chipotle chicken grilled wrap, 86.5. Subway.
And what they did was they tested 50. They tested the DNA of the meat portion.
Yes.
To try and figure out, is this meat or is this something else?
Yes. So the restaurant's oven roasted chicken contained 53.6% chicken DNA, and its chicken strips contained 42.8%.
The rest of it, tasty, tasty soy filler.
The one sandwich
filler
that I do, like if I ever do go there, the sweet chili chicken. Mm. So it's a sweet chili, not so chicken. Maybe. Is that how I had to order it now?
The chicken soy legs? Filler. You love soy filler.
Maybe they're cutting edge. Maybe they're trying to get on this whole like vegan train, and they're trying to move everybody.
There's chicken in there. It's just mixed in with a lot of soy. Mm-hmm. Subway denies the charges, as they typically do.
It does look weird.
Yeah. And it's sort of like, maybe this is something that's unique to Canada, and we get more chicken in our chicken down here. I don't think so.
That little one right down the street from my house in Stoneham, chicken looks weird.
Yeah, if you're going to Subway,
it's delicious.
Just skip the chicken. Just skip the chicken. White pantsuits.
That is what all the women Democrats wore at last night's Trump speech to Congress.
That is correct. Do you know why they were wearing them?
For women's rights.
Well, they were wearing the color of suffrage, because I guess women lost the vote. Mm-hmm. Did women lose the vote?
No.
Last I checked, women still had the vote. Not a good look for the Democrats, but we'll get into that.
I was going to say, there's many things that were wrong with last night. All right. MBTA
set the national record for train derailments on light rail vehicles last year.
And I love how the MBTA tries to spin it and say,
well, we've got the oldest tracks in the world, so of course the trains are going to come off.
They want you to know that they stress, there is stress on the systems. No one was injured last year, severely injured. And all the derailments are rare, considering how busy the Green Line is, because most of these happen all on the Green Line. So 8 of them happened last year here in Boston. 6 were on the Green Line and 2 were maintenance cars. But don't worry, a lot of these happened on trains that didn't have people on them.
Apparently only 2 of these happened during actual operating hours. And the other six...
That's what you're going to tell me?
Happened during overnight maintenance.
Oh, good. There's no people on it. But what if there was?
Well,
what if you had a derailment and there were people on it?
I've got a feeling.
Come on.
With that being, because... Joke. Every time one of those things jumps the tracks, you hear about it. And you didn't hear about it happening during commuting hours a lot last year. I remember one of those train derailments was out near Newton last year. I've got a feeling that what's happening is either at the very end of maintenance shifts when they're rushing to get off the tracks and get things back in operation, or just because they're driving the train on empty tracks late at night. You got some people who are a little heavy on the pedal and are just pushing the trains too fast around some of the corners, mm-hmm. and they're popping off the rails.
Whoops.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think you got some speed demons working on the maintenance crews, and that's contributing to this. I mean, but when you think about it, for the number of trips that they run daily, 8 derailments, it isn't that bad.
It isn't too bad, of course.
It's still,
But again, you need to thank God that there weren't people on it. Or it wasn't at a busy rush hour time when you have... You ever been in anywhere near Fenway area, Brookline, and how many students are walking on the tracks and just people driving all willy-nilly, like crossing.
Oh, yeah.
I freak out every time I need to get from, you know, the right side and do a U-turn because it like you can do U-turns on Brookline Ave or Comm Ave. Freaks out.
But keep it. That's been like that since the 1900s.
It's true.
And everybody in that area, except for people who are there for the first time, everybody who lives and travels in that area has adapted to it. You know it's there. You know there's going to be like trains sneaking up on you and people running all over the place and cars where they shouldn't be. And it's like the commuters, the people walking back and forth to the trains get it. Regular pedestrians get it. The train operators get it. Most of the drivers over there get it. You're right. It's amazing that it's not a bloodbath every single day because you'd think it would be. But there's actually more of a problem with BU students getting taken out by the Green Line because they're walking in the middle of Commonwealth Avenue than there is over on Beacon Street.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, is it ridiculously unsafe? It probably is, but we're all used to it. And they put a couple of fences up in some places so everybody can't just run wherever they want to. So it's working. Sterling Jewelers.
Sterling Junior, Juniors. Jewelers is the parent company to Kay and Jared. And you know that slogan, every kiss begins with K? Well, some kisses been going on at Kay Jewelers.
Some unwanted kisses beginning with K.
Many cases of sexual harassment at the company.
69,000 women are part of a class action.
69,000.
69,000. By the way, Rob Gronkowski giggles every time you say 69. 69,000 women, part of a class action arbitration suit alleging sexual misconduct and gender discrimination because they went to Jared.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently,
not a good look.
Some of those kisses begin with sexual harassment. Not if you're in the business of selling jewelry to women, not a good look. Their stock, trading in their stock was actually halted on Monday after the story came out because it was plummeting so fast. So there may be some real estate opening up at a strip mall near you.
All right, last one for you. Minneapolis, U.S. Bank Stadium.
That's where the Vikings play.
That is, and it's a new stadium.
That's the new, they got the Viking horn and the skull and the, other than that, I couldn't tell you anything about it.
Big problem with the new glass dome. So, one of the statements from somebody at the stadium said it now looks like a scene from Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds because there's a problem with the structure and birds flying into it.
Oh,
so this is according to The Guardian. The glass on the outside
fake
structure.
Fake news. If it's in The Guardian, it's fake news.
Everybody was running it, though. $1 billion it costs to build this in taxpayer money. It reflects the sun so perfectly that the birds that are flying don't see it and they're crashing right into it. They have 360 were just killed.
Oh, that's a problem.
It's, yeah.
Yeah, that's something that happens at most office buildings. Mm-hmm. You know, you get the stray bird that flies in a window and dies.
From what witnesses are saying, all across glass walls.
Oh, that's not good. That's not good.
Yeah.
You know what they ought to do is put up one of those solar towers that vaporizes the birds before they before they can hit the ground.
Just, get the drones going around and just shooting them lasers.
That's a problem with that's a problem with the solar towers. I don't know how you fix that.
Mm-hmm.
There's probably some sort of coating.
Don't clean them, make them dirty.
There's probably some coating that you can put on there that will stop the birds from flying into it.
State of the art.
Ooh, that's poor. Yeah. Best states.
Massachusetts was named best state.
This is the best place to live in America.
Yeah, so it was a combination of jobs, education, and where to live.
Crime, infrastructure. Mm-hmm. We actually had our lowest score.
New Hampshire was number two.
We had our lowest score in infrastructure, yeah. So this is the U.S. News and World Report best states rankings. They put them out annually. McKinsey and Company does the data, and this has a big, big impact on your housing values, kids. But we are the number one state to live in the United States of America. We finished first in education, second in healthcare, seventh in crime and corrections, 19th in infrastructure. We know why, because our roads around here are a mess. 16th in opportunity, 5th in economy, and 16th in government. We all know why, because our government around here is a mess. New Hampshire finished 2nd, Minnesota finished 3rd, and North Dakota finished 4th. So, if you want to live in one of the best states in America in 2017, bring a parka because it's cold. That's what all four of these states have in common. They are very, very, very cold.
Well, you know, I mean, if you go to these hot states like Florida, they're all crazy.
North Dakota is going to fall off this list like a rock because economy, they finished 2nd in economy. And we know a lot of that's being driven by
the
oil
pipelines.
By the oil sands. And that's variable. So,
and fracking.
If the price of oil goes down, so does the economy of North Dakota. Minnesota, I don't know. They should be begging people to live there. It's cold. It's unpleasant. Their football stadium kills birds. Washington State was 5. Have fun living with the Juggalos. Rounding out the top 10, they got a lot of Juggalos in Washington State. Iowa, there's another place nobody wants to live. Utah, despite being 30th in crime, and 23rd in opportunity, was still the 7th best place to live. Maryland was 8. Colorado was 9. And Vermont was 10. So there are actually in the
they
top...
They should just have a category of beer.
In the top 12...
Vermont wins.
You got 4 of the 6 New England states. Because Connecticut was 12. Vermont's 10. New Hampshire's 2. Massachusetts is 1. You don't want to know. Well, Maine was 18. That's not bad. Rhode Island, 21. Florida somehow makes it into the top 25. Florida was 24th overall, despite being 43rd in the nation in opportunity. I guess the warm weather. 37th in the nation in crime.
What was 50?
By the way. Here are your bottom 4.
Okay.
Stop me if you've heard this before, kids. 47, Alabama. 48, Arkansas. 49, Mississippi. What do those three states have in common? Oh, yes, they're also the fattest states in America every single year. And coming in dead last, Louisiana.
Really?
Yeah, 50th in crime.
I was going to say really high crime
rate. Yeah, really high crime rate.
Infrastructure, still a mess.
Infrastructure was not, wait, were they 50th in crime or infrastructure? 50th in crime. They didn't finish any higher than 39th in anything, and that was infrastructure. So I guess some of that rebuilding in the areas devastated by Katrina has helped the infrastructure. But then there are all of the untouched areas devastated by Katrina, which, by the way, Mississippi also has. Mississippi finished dead last in a couple of categories. They were 49th. Wow, it's this state stuns me. 49th in healthcare.
Biscuits and gravy.
49th in healthcare. They were 50th in infrastructure and opportunity, but they finished 21st in crime. So even though it's a horrible place to live, they're still in the top 25 when it comes to violent crime. So
not bad.
Yeah. Stay classy, Mississippi, all I'm going to say. 855-915-9636. It is The Big Picture. Derek, Gary, and Lisa Nichols with you until 9 o'clock. When On the Town with Mikey D, we'll be here with everything you need to know about the Boston music scene. 855-915-9636. Dial that number, because when we come back, we're going to take a look at what our orange president had to say to the Congress last night here on WMFO Medford.
Bill Jones for Social Security, welcoming you to Genius on the Black Side. Time was when black singers, composers, and musicians had to struggle in the backwaters. Now, in the concert halls, on Broadway stages, and on Hollywood sets, they're right up there, front and center. And right up front, I'd like to invite you to listen to a genuine example of Genius on the Black Side. Chaka Khan is taking off in 1979 as the hot new black female vocalist. Chaka's career began at the age of 16 when she first performed in Chicago supper clubs, singing jazz, rock, and rhythm and blues. In 1972, she joined up with a group called Rufus, and as lead singer for that group, her distinctive voice became familiar to fans all over the world. Shaka will sing for us in a moment after this from Social Security. A disabling illness or accident can happen to anyone, young or old. With such a disability, there's always a great strain on the family budget. And that's where your Social Security protection comes in. If you've worked long enough in a job covered by Social Security, and you're so seriously disabled that you can't work for a year or more, you may be able to get monthly Social Security disability payments. There's a 5-month waiting period, with the first payment for the 6th full month of disability. If you're eligible for these payments, your dependents will also get monthly checks. The younger you are when you become disabled, the less Social Security credit you need. You'll also get Medicare protection if you get Social Security disability benefits for 2 years. For more information, write or call any Social Security office. Someone there will be glad to help you. A big hit for Shaka Khan in 1978, I'm Every Woman. Talented Shaka Khan singing I'm Every Woman. Well, once again, it's time to go. And once again, it's time to remind you that you must apply for Social Security benefits. They do not come automatically. If you have any questions, just visit or call any Social Security office. They'll be glad to help you. Until next time, when we pay tribute to another genius on the black side, this is James Earl Jones saying so long.
The international struggles of our world may lead to
nuclear holocaust.
To survive, you must have protection from radioactive fallout.
In the past, heavy equipment necessitated a long, costly operation for out-of-home shelter installation.
Today, Survive-All basement-type shelters offer a combination steel and concrete do-it-yourself fallout shelter.
Civil defense approved, Survive-All offers maximum protection from fallout and falling debris, plus a basic equipment kit for family survival.
There's low initial cost and FHA approval. Nothing down in 5 years to pay.
For your family's protection, see a Survive-All shelter today.
All aboard! Hi, this is Ozzy Osbourne. For many years, you know I've had a drink problem and I'm trying to battle that problem every single day. But one thing I don't do, I don't drive my car when I'm drinking. I get someone to drive me. Do not drink and drive. It's the stupidest thing. If you drink, just don't drive. Not only are you going to hurt yourself, you may hurt some other person, and you wouldn't want that on your conscience, would you?
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
WMFO Medford. I'm Lisa Nichols with Derek Gary, and we are The Big Picture with you every Wednesday night, 7 to 9. So last night, President Trump, he had his first solo performance, you call it, in front of Congress, all on his own, with his two buddies right in the back, which I thought...
Frickin' frack in their black jackets
in their,
and blue ties.
Matching suits.
Yes.
It was basically a State of the Union, but you can't officially call it
right.
State of
the
Union.
It's the president.
The new incoming president can't call it a State of the Union. You know, there were some policies that I liked, some I didn't like, but what we're going to go over, the speech itself, it was good.
It was.
It was very good.
To the shock, I think, of everybody watching, myself included. Because after watching this guy on the campaign trail, I was trying to picture Donald Trump giving a speech, giving a State of the Union. And like, what the hell is this going to look like? This is going to be a disaster. And it actually, for the most part, was not. Somebody wrote him a speech. He put it up on the teleprompter. He read it.
And he read it well.
He didn't go off script that much. He did a few times. Mm-hmm. Whenever he starts repeating things.
You know that he's looking for words.
He didn't use the word bigly once.
Mm-hmm. I didn't get to catch it during its live, but I got home just in time as they were replaying it on CNN. You know, this is the best job that I think I've seen him do. And as you said, he was very well prepared for it. You were seeing before... They were showing clips of him reading it in the limo. So he was clearly going over it. And I thought maybe the venue wouldn't serve him that well, considering the state that Congress is in. Surprisingly, he did well. He read the speech well.
Yeah.
And they took to it. And again, there are many people that didn't stand. Shame on the... Democrats.
Well, let's back up for a second, because we'll get to that in a second.
I was going to say that hissed at him while he walked in, not the many other things that they should be shameful about.
There's a whole package we could do about the Democrats but
most importantly, he came across as a president.
He looked darn presidential,
and it was by far his best moment, and I mean, absolutely by far his best speech that he's ever made.
So here you go. These are the CBS numbers. Well, here's the big number. The Dow Jones Industrial Average closed above 21,000 points for the first time in its history today, partly because of the speech. Because everybody's like, oh, okay, this guy's like, no, he's like a real president and stuff. We're going to be okay here. CBS did some polling. 83% of Republicans and 24%, a quarter Democrats, felt more optimistic about what his administration will do after watching the speech last night. 76% of all viewers approved of the speech last night. 24% disapproved. We know who that 24% is. It's Democrats. And we're going to get to why this could be a problem for the Democrats.
But it's interesting this. See such a shift from maybe the last speech or what many people think or would assume he was going to talk about or how he was his approach. And, you know, this sudden shift, you're talking about numbers of approval ratings that were anywhere between like 35 and 50 for a president at this time coming in should be in the 60s.
But what have we been hearing about this guy? He's a monster. He's out of control. He's a demagogue. He wants to ruin America. He's going to take away all of your rights.
He had complete control of every point that he was trying to make in that speech.
The person that you saw standing in front of Congress last night wasn't a monster. He was a guy who actually had some decent ideas that a lot of Americans can get behind.
And I think a lot of Americans listened.
Now, here's the good that came out of this. He wants to spend $1 trillion on infrastructure that he called the biggest infrastructure development plan program in the United States since the Eisenhower administration. Very few of us who are alive remember the Eisenhower administration. It was before all of our time. He built the interstate highway system, and he built it partly for military reasons. That's a huge thing. And Trump said it's going to be private-public partnership. We'll see how all that works out. But the point that he underscored at the end of it is hire American and buy American, which means we're not going to go out and let Japan supply all the, and China supply all the steel for our infrastructure improvements. We're going to do that here. This is very, very smart thinking. This is not what you expect from a Republican, however. Republicans don't go in on these big infrastructure deals. So this is very different. He wants to increase the Pentagon's budget by nearly 10% to, I believe, $54 billion. That's about as typical Republican as you can get. Years ago, somebody asked me, what is the difference between a Democrat and a Republican? And I've been giving the same answer to this question ever since. Democrats and Republicans both seek to create jobs. They do it in different ways. Democrats increase government spending on social projects and bureaucracy, so they hire more government workers. Republicans increase spending on the military, which benefits private enterprise, your Boeings, your Lockheed Martins, your Honeywells, Booz Allen Hamilton, your CIA fronts, all those companies benefit from this. So the federal dollars go to private companies that develop all the technology and hire people, and then they take that technology and they sell it to everybody else in the world. Which is why when I hear Nancy Pelosi come out and say, you know, all this military spending is a blow to innovation in the United States, I wonder if she lives in the same country as the rest of us, because all of the innovation in the United States came from two places, NASA and the military. That's it. Any great new technological idea either came from our military aerospace complex or was purchased by our military, purchased and developed.
Where's that money coming from?
By our military aerospace complex. Okay, that's where American innovation happens, folks. Writing an app that gets you a cab, not innovation.
She would have to think about what is actual innovation.
Yes. Now, he came right out and said he wants family leave. That's a big deal. Mm-hmm. That's not something you expect. And Democrats actually get on their feet for that one. He sort of laid out what he wants to do with health care.
It was a little wishy-washy. He said he does want Congress to repeal Obamacare, but and replace it with laws that let, I think the quote was something about, buy their own plans instead of the one U.S. government wants them to have.
Correct.
And made it a point to say if you do have pre-existing conditions, you can still get it. I'm assuming that he didn't want to have that, if you like your plan, you can keep it moment that President Obama had that would keep replaying over and over again during his entire...
He said it, but to his credit, you know, he said during the speech, I'm going to paraphrase this a little bit, and what he said was, as we know now, if you like your plan, you can keep your plan is not the way that things worked out. And it was good because he stopped short of calling Obama a liar, which I think a lesser Donald Trump might have done in that moment.
No, and absolutely. And I mean, it opens up, this wasn't, didn't work out how it was supposed to or planned to do, essentially.
The thing's falling apart. And
in reality is, we are in a country that faces, you know, it's so difficult to get insurance now. And if you're not lucky enough that you get it through your work, and even some people, like, I pay a lot of money for health insurance and I get it through my work. But if you try to get it through the network and get it through Obamacare, you can't afford it.
Right.
This is why premiums are so high, because the only people that can afford it are either retired or middle-aged.
So
you're wondering why 20-year-olds aren't doing it.
Trump's basic proposal is, we're going to give you tax credits equal to the value of your health insurance. Practically speaking, that's not going to happen, because you'd stop collecting taxes for millions of Americans if that were the case. He also laid out three specifics. Number one, pre-existing conditions are going to be covered. Number two, he wants an end to state-by-state insurance sales. The way the system is set up now, if you sell insurance in California, you can't offer the same plan in Nevada and Oregon and New Mexico. Every plan has to be, is overseen by a state insurance commission, which is why Massachusetts was able to go out and pass its version of Obamacare, Romney Care, the health connector, whatever you want to call it, because it was unique to Massachusetts. Donald Trump is saying, let's throw that up. Okay, if Aetna wants to write a single plan that covers all of America, let them write a single plan that covers all of America.
Do you think that's good or bad?
Insurance actuaries will tell you one of two things. That number one, potentially it's better, because you now have an entire country worth of healthy people to insure. Insurance is all about getting the money from the healthy people so that you give it to the risk pool.
And you want how it evens out.
You want a small risk pool, and you want a large number of premium holders. So, or you want a large number of policy holders. So if you expand it nationwide and you look at the percentage of people who are likely to get sick on a nationwide basis rather than a state-by-state business, if you're in Mississippi, if you're in Arkansas, if you're in New Mexico, one of these states that has a terrible health system, really sick people, high levels of obesity, where insurance, where health insurers fail left and right.
You have the opportunity to insure other people from other states that are more healthy.
Exactly. You spread out the risk. So now,
but essentially, if you're talking about Aetna.
So basically, I'm in Mississippi and I'm losing my shirt because there's nothing but sick people here. You let me go get people in Colorado and Rhode Island and Iowa, where people are healthy, I can make this work.
But isn't Aetna operating in every single state?
Yes, but they're running 50 different businesses in 50 different states. And there is no overlap between them.
Prices for each one.
Correct, because all of that is set by a state insurance commission.
So that is all involved with Obamacare. When I sign up, I'm going to pay a different amount if I'm signing up in Mississippi than when I am in Massachusetts,
correct,
when I am in Maine.
And that's going to be based on the state-specific risks. This is why...
Doesn't cost of living come into effect at all?
This is why a lot of states are losing all their insurers. This is why insurers are pulling out. They're like, we can't make Florida work. We can't make Mississippi work. There's just too many sick people. And people who have chronic illness, by virtue of having chronic illness, are going to be poor, because a lot of them can't work, or they can't work full time, which means they're the ones getting the subsidized coverage. But they're also the ones who are consuming the largest amount of benefits from the insurance policies. The individual mandate, which was a stupid, bad idea that I've been complaining about for more than a decade, was supposed to make that go away. If we force everybody to buy insurance, then you even out the risk problems. Donald Trump is basically saying, that's not what works. Get rid of all these...
It's not what has been working, because people are taking the fine at the end of the year when they're getting their taxes done rather than signing up for insurance.
Get rid of all these state rules, let them sell insurance nationwide, and they will find a way to make it work. He may be right about that. At the very least, it's something we haven't tried before. Now, there were two other things that were included in this. One is trying to figure out what we're going to do with the folks who are on Medicare and making sure that that's funded. He didn't say how that was going to happen. He talked about states expanding their Medicare rolls. And I think when Donald Trump says states, he's being very specific.
Is that possible to completely open up across the board insurance companies to insure somebody, any state that they want, but then have it state by state for Medicare?
No, it would take an act of... No, well, Medicare is nationwide. Medicare is a federal program. It's nationwide. But the way that it operates is the federal government gives block grants to every state to pay their Medicare bills.
Yes.
So Donald Trump is basically saying...
But no, some states are getting more than others.
Depending on need, correct.
Yes.
Correct.
Some states get a lot
more than they pay in. Florida, for example, tons of Medicaid down there because it's where all the elderly go. Arizona,
now, if you got
similar
rid
situation.
Of it state by state and gave each state equally. Then you would run into problems.
We're talking about private versus public, so it's really two different animals. But if coverage for the poor is somehow going to go under Medicare, you got to reconcile these things. This is potentially a problem with making this thing work. So we talked about state expansion of Medicare, which sounds a little bit like an unfunded mandate and is not going to go over well in a country dominated by Republican governors. And he also talked about lowering pharmaceutical costs. And I think he plans to be very aggressive on that last point, and that could do a lot to knock down healthcare costs in this country.
Look how many companies have a monopoly on certain drugs. It's crazy.
These are all good things. And he talked about immigration, and he talked about everything in the context of how we get Americans working again. And he brought up this idea, as we discussed earlier in the show, that when you have an exploitable labor force in this country, it depresses wages and it depresses the number of jobs that are available, and that we need to do something about this. His solutions are build a wall, or drive out all of the illegals. We're not going to deport them all, but we're going to suggest very strongly that you go away. And then he talked about immigration reform, and he talked about it in a very interesting way, something that we haven't heard ever before in this country, which is merit-based immigration. What is merit-based immigration? Canada has it, which is why Canada only has about 30 million people, and we have 300. If you want to immigrate to Canada, you have to provide skills that no one else in Canada currently possesses, and you have to have the financial means to provide for yourself, which means you can't go to Canada unless you got a full-time job waiting. You can't get a full-time job in Canada unless every possible Canadian candidate for that job has been exhausted. It is very, very difficult for an American.
That's why
to go to
it
Canada.
Is hilarious when, you know, post-election and everybody was saying they're going to move to Canada. Good luck.
Try
getting into.
Yeah.
That is why that country has such strict immigration policies.
Canada had 150 immigrants show up on its border in Manitoba the other night, and everybody in the country is freaking out now.
Because essentially what you have here in the United States is a country that we have, even though they're supposedly not open borders, that you come in to better yourself.
Give us your you're hungry, you're poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. That's what America is. You just get here and you're going to be fine.
Now, how do people come, you know, whatever way that you do come, you now have to rely on the government to do that. Unless you get a job suddenly, or do you have a house set up? Are you living with somebody? That's why I like this merit-based reform.
Now,
it has some good and some bad.
Well, the good about it is it gets rid of all of the migrant workers. It gets rid of all of the unskilled workers, the people who can't speak English, the people who are going to be fodder for exploitation by morally bankrupt business owners, and replaces them with engineers and lawyers and doctors and computer scientists and people that we would like to have. It also basically extends a giant middle finger to the poor, which is not something that may sit well with the American people as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
That may not be, and
no, because what is the first reaction? Oh, you only want the rich white people to come in.
And make no mistake, I'm not going to sugarcoat this. That is an intended outcome of a program like this. This is a program that basically says to the poor, go home. You can't come here. Whereas the ignore the law policy that we've had for the last 20 odd years has basically said, everybody come on in.
But the reality is it's not go home poor and get out of here. It's stop taking advantage of the systems that we have in place for the people that actually need it. We have poor here in America. People get on hard times. They lose their job. Something happens. A spouse dies. And you now have to get on federal funding, whether it be in the WIC program or whatnot. That gone are the days of that happening. It is now people are coming into this country because of these benefits. Come to America because you can get all the free things. Because for me, as a 32-year-old that still has student loans, that works full-time, it would be easier for me not to work, to have a baby, to sit on my butt every single day than it is for somebody to come to the country and reap all the benefits of my working.
At the same time, an immigration policy that basically says we're only letting in the smart and the rich is not going to sit well with the American people.
Words, of course.
It's too. That's what it is.
It is.
That's what merit-based immigration is. Okay? Like I say, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I don't. There has to be a happy medium.
Absolutely.
There has to be. This is too far over to the other side.
Of course.
You know, this is saying, hey, we're not going to have immigration reform that harms business. Mm-hmm. But
no, because we're essentially this is the United States, and people do come here at their lowest to benefit. And I know some people that have come to this country that work their way from the bottom and are very successful, but had nothing when they came here.
Right. And it was uncomfortable last night to hear him talking about his new Victims of Immigrant Crime Engagement Office at the Department of Homeland Security and sharing the stories of people whose loved ones were killed by illegal immigrants. Every government functions on some level and wins the support of the people on some level by finding an enemy to rally the people against. And in the Trump administration, that enemy is anyone who's not an American. Anyone who would come to this country who's not an American. The enemy is immigrants. And this is a big, big departure from the days when we had Gaddafi and we had Saddam and we had Ayatollah Khomeini. Those were the demons that were going to kill us. Before that, it was the Russians. Those were the enemies that were going to wipe out America if we didn't do something about them. And to see that, first of all, I don't like it as a basis of government.
Essentially, he's trying to give justification to his very far-right policies.
He's not, because I don't think he's thought it through that far. He needs an other. And the other, in Donald Trump's eyes, is not Vladimir Putin. It's not China. It's not anyone that we have to negotiate with and build a partnership with. It is the people who are in this country who don't belong in this country.
But this is how he got to where he was.
I know.
Based on this nationalistic momentum that was happening. And not only people just point to the South and, you know, they rose up again. This was happening all across the country.
I know, but here's some reality, okay? There is a logic behind, and I've laid it out before, there is a logic behind what Donald Trump is proposing, okay? Yes, if you get rid of this exploitable class of workers, you have to pay Americans more. Merit-based immigration fits with that. But the general demonization of the immigrant is going a little bit too far. And for some people, it's going a lot too far. I don't need to figure out how far down the rabbit hole we can or cannot safely go. All I can say is it is uncomfortable to see an American president demonize people like this, because our enemies have never been individuals. Our enemies have always been foreign leaders or abstract concepts. We're having a war on drugs. We're having a war on terrorism. We're having a war on ISIS. We're having a war on Al-Qaeda. Well, who is that? We don't know who that is. You know, you can't walk down the street and be like, oh, that's an ISIS. Mm-hmm. They're our enemy. I just saw an ISIS. You don't think of it that way.
It's a concept. It's an idea as a whole.
Exactly. What Donald Trump is doing is basically saying, hey, you know, for good reasons, by the way. There are reasons why this immigration problem is as serious as it is in this country, because we've ignored the law for the last 2 decades. We get a lot of people in this country with no skills, who can't get good jobs, mm-hmm. who are being exploited by morally corrupt business owners. Okay? Yes, we do well to get them back home and figure out what the heck it is we're doing here before we let anyone back in again. But to demonize the individuals the way that Donald Trump is, and to suggest that they are somehow the enemy and they are somehow the problem, in my eyes, just goes too far.
Do you think that's what he actually believes, or do you think that's what he believes the people want to hear, or at least his supporters?
I think he...
Or is it done out of a necessity to have a reason why he's doing it?
I don't think Donald...
Because understanding, as I said...
This may break into the broadcast. This could be a test, but that was the emergency alert system that just went off. Does that from time to time. I think on some level, Donald Trump is just not a verbal creature.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's somebody who thinks this stuff through. And I think he's somebody, you know, people look at him and they're like, oh, he's all over the place. He's operating on instinct. And it's like, he's not. Donald Trump is very good at assessing a situation and understanding a situation, and that comes with a lot of thought and introspection. It doesn't make it from his head to his mouth. And what comes out of his mouth tends to be...
Sometimes just doesn't sit completely well with
very surface,
the American public.
Very high level, very basic, very simple language. Partly because I don't think he can articulate it any better than that. It doesn't make him dumb.
No, and it... Absolutely.
He's just not a great speaker. And in this situation, I think there's something that he's trying to say, which is not that I want to demonize these people, not that we should hate these people, but that we have a problem.
But that's how it's coming off.
The way that it's coming off is the immigrants are bad. Yeah.
Lack of diction or completed.
Which gives nonstop sentences. Political ammo to the Democrats. Who, when he announced the voice thing last night, you could hear the shocked gasps going through the gallery. And for that to be that loud, there are Republicans gasping alongside the Democrats. Mm-hmm. So that part of it, not so good. The isolationist part of it, possibly good. He laid out his argument for tariffs extremely well last night, talking about how when we export goods, we're paying tariffs. And when companies export to the United States, they're not.
Mm-hmm. It's the whole thing about... And then he almost kind of backtracked about the whole NATO originally did not support it, saying, now, yes, he does support it, but for countries that are not paying essentially
if you're not paying,
their part, yeah. their fair share, because... America pays the most.
We basically said, well, everybody's supposed to pay according to their GDP. You're supposed to throw 2% of your GDP into NATO. And a lot of countries haven't been doing that. Greece is one of them. I think Greece gets a pass because they can't afford anything right now.
Yeah.
They're like the crazy uncle that's no good with money. And it's like, we're going to give them $100 every now and again and hope they don't come back. But for the rest of these countries, some of them have just been... sitting back. Some have just been like, I don't feel like making my NATO payments. And Donald Trump basically said, look, you make your NATO payments or we're out of here. And as soon as he says that, suddenly everybody wakes up and they're like, let's pay our NATO bill. Because we like the United States.
Mm-hmm. And you want to be on our side.
Sharing their military technology and their intelligence and their protection with us.
But
that's
because
a good thing.
For so long they've been getting away with it.
Because everybody looked the other way. The Democrats are having a very bad day today because they looked terrible last night. Particularly that little gaggle of Democratic women sitting in their white pantsuits doing thumbs down during his speech.
Yeah. Again, hissing. Couldn't even stand when the widow of a...
That's been blown out of proportion. There's some fake news floating around with that. There's fake news. They stood. No. Maybe... They stood. There were only a couple of people who didn't stand, and that's disgusting, but that's a separate issue. The Democratic women looked like a bunch of petulant children last night. That's how you looked. That was the optics. And for the rest of the American people who were listening to Donald Trump and saying a lot of this makes sense and a lot of this sounds good and I'm on board with this, that is a bad, bad look for the Democrats because...
I mean, essentially, you have a dying party.
You have...
And after watching it last night, it's dying more.
You have a president who will not hesitate to brand you as traitors. And when you sit on your hands While he lays out ideas that are good for America, he makes his point. We're not going to get to do what's hot or a thing that happened.
We can save it for next week.
We'll save it for next week. We're out of time. On the Town with Mikey D is coming up next. We will be back next week with all of the features of the show because we won't be talking about the president's speech or Oscars at the top. So until then, Lisa Nichols.
It was lovely as always.
And I am Derek Gary. Stay safe, everybody.